beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. They were pop culture darlings. CNN's traveling chef Anthony Bourdain and fashion icon Kate Spade both taking their own lives last week. Their deaths forcing the world to re-examine the issue of suicide and mental health. Tonight, we're doing the same on this Medical Monday. My guests are Dr. Stephen Tulin, clinical psychologist with the Howard University Department of Psychiatry, and Siobhan Odom, psychotherapist and founder of Acoma Counseling Concepts. Lines are open. If you want to talk about this issue, if you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Using the hashtag WHURFM, you're certainly welcome to tweet us. Siobhan and Dr. Tulin, thank you both for coming in. I appreciate it.
Good evening.
Let me first ask you both, the CDC releasing information just last week saying there's a 30% rise in the suicide rate of some 25 states from 1999 to 2016. Does that shock you, Siobhan?
No.
Why not?
Maybe one, because as therapists, we see this stuff often, but also just within recent years, especially the past election was very stressful for many people. All the changes with the immigration legislation. So definitely some serious factors to consider.
Mm-hmm. But this at 1999 mm-hmm. to 2016, Dr. Tulin, that's more than just one election cycle. There's something else that has to be going on.
Well, I think there are a number of issues. And one to start with is more reporting of suicide when that is the actual cause of death. Because suicide, we know, is still highly stigmatized. In the past, it was more completely covered up. So I think this is being reported and talked about. And I think it's better to talk about it so that people can get help.
One of the things that we've seen a lot of over the past several days after the passing of Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain are other high-profile people talking about thoughts of suicide. I saw one of the anchors on CNN saying that after losing a relationship, she thought about committing suicide. After losing a job, she thought about committing suicide. But she was talking very openly mm-hmm. about that. But what's the difference between someone thinking about it and having a mental health issue?
I love that question, Harold. So pretty much we have something that we call active suicidal ideation and passive suicidal ideation. So if someone is passively suicidal, they will say things like, I'm thinking about going to sleep and not waking up. Or, you know, I thought about what would life be like for people if I wasn't around. But active suicidal ideation is really, listen, I've made a plan of how I'm going to harm myself. I'm going to start giving away my belongings. And pretty much I've let people know specifically, hey, I kind of don't want to be around. In my experience, people that have attempted, they have pretty much, you could pretty much see that prior to their attempt that they did do some things that would point to that direction. But to also answer your question, it's just general mental health. There's a wide range of symptoms that one could use to respond to telling the difference between if it's just general mental health or someone suicidal, because someone can be mildly depressed and never think about harming themselves or anybody else.
But that brings me to my next question, Dr. Tulin. Maybe this is an overgeneralization, but doesn't everybody think about suicide at some point in their lives, no matter how, even children?
I think you're exactly right. The thoughts that people have that we would categorize as suicidal, happen for many people under what we talked about, someone losing a relationship that was very important to them, losing a job. And we think about the time period we're talking about was in part during the most recent, very significant recession when people lost jobs, couldn't support their families, didn't see a way out. And this may sound simplistic, but suicide is always a permanent solution to a problem that is temporary or will eventually be fixed.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about suicide and mental health. If you have a question, if you have a comment, if you are perhaps worried about someone, a loved one, a family member, a friend that you think may be in danger of taking their own life, you can give us a call if you have a question, again, at 202-319-7810. Also, we want to mention that we wanted to give you the phone number for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. That is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. That's 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255. It's a National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. 24-hour help is available if you are seeking immediate counseling, if you are seeking help because of thoughts related to suicide. If you want to talk to us, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You mentioned something, Siobhan, that kind of struck me. Someone may be slightly depressed. They may be feeling low. You may even have someone who is a friend who just has a personality that seems on the outside down. Mm-hmm. What are the warning signs? What should people look for if they are concerned about a friend?
The number one thing that I always say to look for is if you notice that someone is isolating, depression is very seductive. I tell people that all the time. And depression is very seductive in that it pretty much the irrational thinking in depression, it convinces the individual to think, you know, I don't need to be around other people. I just need to be in my space. I could just stay in my bed for hours. And basically, I mean, if you're sleeping a lot, then sometimes you may not have the energy to eat. And if you're not eating, then you definitely don't have the energy to be out and about social. So I pretty much say look for if people are isolating, look for if people are, if they're decreasing what they eat. If you notice that somebody was very motivated and very goal oriented and you just notice that they have a hard time just sticking to those commitments, they seem very moody, irritable, forgetful. I would pretty much say to look there, because sometimes people think that to be depressed means someone has to be sad. And some of the most angriest people I've ever met are some of the most depressed people I've ever met. And in the DMV, I've seen depression show up in terms of anger.
Doctor, your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I would say many more of us, I think, are familiar with Anthony Bourdain. I watched the show all the time, and in thinking about this, we were so shocked because he seemed so happy, so fascinated by what he was doing, by cooking, by eating, by traveling, so upbeat that it was hard for us to understand what happened.
Well, let me stop you there, because I want you to address this. In an article, I believe it was with the New York Times, his own mother was quoted as saying he had everything. This is his mother, mind you, and while we may not know the relationship that they had, but I would agree that despite some of his struggles with drugs, with alcohol, admitted depression in years past, he was a fascinating man with a fascinating life, cooking, eating, traveling the world. Why would you imagine that someone who had everything decided to throw it all away by taking their own life?
Well, I'd say that oftentimes others, even one's own mother, might say, you have everything. Sometimes we perceive that of people who are wealthy.
But yes.
Like Kate Spade. Yes.
But Johnny Carson, the entertainer, once said, this sounds simple, but he said, the only thing that having a lot of money solves is having problems about money. And I think what he meant was you can have all kinds of other problems in life that can't be solved by money alone. The other issue is you brought up Anthony Bourdain's use of substances, alcohol, drugs. We call those problems substance use disorders because we don't want to stigmatize them. Many people use drugs or alcohol, which is a drug, and we do know sometimes a suicide attempt can happen under those circumstances.
That's very true. And I thank you for mentioning that. Substance use is very important when we want to talk about suicide attempts. And then also, there was somebody that came out after Johnny Carson, Notorious B.I.G., that said, more money, more problems.
Right. Yep.
And that was very true. But in Kate Spade's case, and I posted this on my Facebook website today, for Kate Spade as a mom, a lot of people don't understand that she may have been thinking that she was relieving her family by taking her life. She actually felt like, okay, you know, I was doing my family a favor by taking my life. One of the things that I'm familiar with as somebody that specializes in perinatal mental health is a lot of times for women that have postpartum depression, sometimes they think that their baby is better without them. And so sometimes, so if you're thinking that you're not worthy enough for people, you're not thinking about money. You're not thinking about your job. One thing I can always tell you is depression may start off as externally motivated, but the very, like, the severity of depression is very internally, driven, meaning when someone is so depressed, they don't care about what's going on outside of the world. They don't. They're totally tuned out. And Michael Jackson and Elvis let us know they didn't care about how much money they had. They felt alone. They felt like nobody liked them. They felt nobody understood them. And that's how irrational thoughts work.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about suicide and mental health. Stefan calling from D.C. What's on your mind? Stefan, go right ahead.
Hi, this is Stephen, actually, not Stefan.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, please, Stephen. Go ahead.
I was actually wanted to actually say I'm 29 now. I've been suicidal over half my childhood life, and what I have accomplished was that even though I was hanging with the wrong crowd and I started to cut myself and start growing up and going to the church, and I realized when you get suicidal, you have to sit down. I started writing poetry. I started doing things that I usually don't do, hanging around different people, godly people, and now I won't say 6 years, not thinking about being suicidal, but every time I do feel it, I do something about it. Like I go into a quiet place and I'll sit there and I think about what I want to do with my life. If I was gone, how people would judge me, I have to remember if I kill myself, it's something I have to face for my Lord, my Savior. So I was like, I got to find something else to do in my community to keep me busy. And I thank my mom for that, for letting me go get help on my own.
Mm-hmm. Are you taking any medications or have you taken medication, Stephen?
I was taking 3 types of medication, and when I was, and it really, really wasn't trying to help me. It was just trying to keep me calm. But when I get really frustrated, the medication just make my heart race more than what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually took myself off the medication to better my own self and take control of my own reaction.
Well, I want to thank you. So I want to thank you for calling us and sharing this very personal, highly personal situation with us. And we are so glad that you are mentally better, emotionally better, and that you are still with us to tell this story. And so we certainly wish you the absolute best of health. I need to take a break, but I want to talk to William from D.C. Also, lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are still taking your phone calls even after 7:30, so please give us a call if you have a question, if you have a concern. We are talking about suicide and mental health. Also, we want to remind you that the phone number for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-8255, 1-800-273-8255. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. We'll be back in a moment.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 90.7, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are looking at suicide and mental health. On this Medical Monday, my guests are Dr. Stephen Tulin. He's a clinical psychologist with the Howard University Department of Psychiatry. Also, Siobhan Odom, psychotherapist and founder of Acoma Counseling Concepts. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Taking calls right now from William, calling from D.C. William, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I just wanted to get your input, understand, like, what are some of the statistics out there currently with the rise of suicide as it relates to the influence of social media? And it's kind of a two-part question. With, you know, if I'm a family member and of somebody who is suicidal or somebody who's demonstrated, like, acts of, like, cutting themselves, like, What are some things that you can tell, you know, family members that are closest to the individual, you know, that we can do to help the individual in that situation?
Well, let me see if Dr. Tulin can address that, and then I'll let you chime in as well, Siobhan. Dr. Tulin?
Sure. I think we've certainly read of many individual cases where there's bullying on social media that has a tremendous impact on individuals. I don't have the exact numbers. We certainly are going to continue to have social media, but I think there have been some changes recently that may impact that and have some parental controls, especially where children are involved, obviously.
Have you had any discussions with your patients about this issue, and if so, what have they said?
I haven't had anyone talk to me specifically about something they saw on social media about themselves, for example. I treat adults and not children, so it's a different impact.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to go back to a comment about medications. I'm a psychologist, and psychologists do not prescribe medications except for a very, very small number of psychologists. So I don't do that. I sort of say I don't have any skin in the game. But working with people who can get these medicines from a psychiatrist or from another doctor, often their primary care provider, I've seen these medicines work really miracles in terms of people's feelings and their mood. There's not a guarantee that they'll work. They don't work as quickly as we would like, but they can help tremendously. I think any decision on meds should be between that individual and their provider and should be done carefully. They may be able to come off them,
mm-hmm.
but they can help.
I want to chime in to kind of answer your question. So just some quick statistics that one death by suicide. There's one death by suicide for every 25 attempts. 40% of persons who complete suicide have made a previous attempt. So that's 9 out of 10 people who attempt suicide and survive do not go on to complete suicide at a later date. There's also higher rates for individuals that have a history of substance abuse, as we talked earlier. But to answer your question in terms of how to talk to family members about these things, I often have to tell people you have to recognize where a person is at in terms of being receptive to receiving treatment. We have to understand that it's not 1981 anymore. We can't necessarily force somebody into outpatient therapy if they're not in the space to be receptive to it, but you can provide individuals with resources. There's many a times I've had clients show up on my couch for the first time because their friends helped them to make that first phone call, and they've given their friend the permission to come with them to their first session.
Thank you so much, William, for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Clyde, calling from Woodbridge. What's on your mind?
Hello, Harold?
Yes, go right ahead.
Yes, I think that... you know, when they were talking about Anthony Bourdain and everybody, I think that when people have a void in their life, in their spirit, that like they were saying before, it has nothing to do with money, fame. It has to do with, I believe it has to do with spirituality, something that's missing in a person's life that creates the depression. There are a lot of things that, you know, scientists don't understand about suicide and things like that, but that's what I think.
Well, let's thank you. Thank you so much, Clyde, for that. Let's talk about that briefly. If you break your arm, you know how to address that. You call an ambulance, or you go to the doctors, you go to an emergency, and they, you know, they set it, they give you some pain pills, they put a cast on it, and hopefully it will heal to almost 100%. But if the quote unquote mind is broken, or if it is fractured, the fix is not the same. And something that Stephen said that really struck me, the caller about 5 minutes ago, he said that he was suicidal for years. And I'm trying to understand what does that mean? What is broken or fractured in the mind that would put someone in a position to feel that they would want to take their own life over a period of years?
I would say that we certainly are still learning, and there is a lot we don't know, but depression and bipolar disorder, which is a combination of depression alternating with mania, have genetic components. Some families have a greater impact. Of course, we always think, well, the parents were depressed, the child would learn this. But we understand that there is a genetic loading. So the first thing is we don't want to blame the victim of these thoughts and feelings, because this may be part of their makeup, like their height or their hair color, something that they certainly have no control over and would love to change and can't see a way out of. Hopefully we'll improve on finding out more about this in the future.
I have a question. So, Dr. Tulane, would you agree with this? So I also tell people that we can't feel what our brain doesn't produce. And so when people are depressed, they don't have the typical levels of serotonin and dopamine, correct? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times, and that's one thing as a therapist that agitates me, when people are like, well, just suck it up and get over it and be happy. Well, that person literally cannot feel happy because their brain is not producing the happy chemicals that they need. And so to also answer your questions as to how someone can stay suicidal for years, I've seen this over the time in community mental health, where sometimes it starts off with, I lost a job. And then, okay, we're working really hard to get you linked up with some type of, you know, headhunter or case management to get you a job. You don't get the job fast enough. So now you become homeless. So now you're homeless and you're living in a shelter with individuals that traumatize you and expose you to situations that you've never lived in before when you were working and could provide for yourself. And then while you're homeless, you may learn that a family member has died. And then because you've been homeless and you haven't been working, you realize that now you have health issues. Well, over a time span of over 3 years or 4 years, if those things keep happening one after the other after the other, I mean, that would take an emotional toll on somebody, and it would make one feel like, well, what's happening to me? I've had patients tell me, you know, nobody cares about me and nobody needs me. And after a while, some people really are struggling to find hope. Some people are really struggling to find meaning. And I really do want to say this to all the people that are listening out there. You really need to be careful how you speak to people when you have jobs that require you to help people get food, to help people get shelter, to help people get a job, to help a mother get daycare, to help a dad get aftercare, because you don't know what that person has been battling with before they come in front of you.
But let me ask you this, because if you have person A and you have person B and they have ups and downs in life, not severe as you just described, but stuff happens and then things get better. Person A has what we may call a positive attitude. Person B is, oh, woe is me. And yet their lives have the same kinds of ups and downs. Is the person who does not handle that well, are they experiencing difficulties with mental illness? And does the person who has a quote unquote positive attitude, is there something that their brain is doing that person B's brain is not doing?
Maybe yes or maybe no. But I always tell people this. If you take a room of 20 moms that have given birth and you ask them about their pregnancies, they're not all going to give you the same birth story.
Absolutely not.
They're not going to give you the same pregnancy stories. So is the medical condition of pregnancy, the diagnosis of pregnancy, the same across? Yes. But how that woman experiences her pregnancy is going to differ from woman to woman. And that's the same thing it is for us. When we go through a car accident, for example, I have seen people go through a minor car accident and they're just like, oh my gosh, like super traumatized. And then I've seen people go through a minor car accident like, okay, like it's been worse.
Right. Oh, the car is totaled and they're like, hey, I'm fine.
Yes.
Keep it moving.
Yes.
And then others, fender bender, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Let me take another phone call real quick. Let me talk to Danya. Danya calling from D.C. What's on your mind?
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
My youngest brother died from suicide in 94, and it was extremely hard on my family, and I took it real hard, and I went into a deep depression myself. But I think one of our biggest problems is trying to get away from that stigma and make it easier for people to talk about it, Mental illness is an illness, and it should start being treated just like diabetes, cancer, and something like that, because people are looking at the stigma versus trying to deal with the issue at hand, and I think that's one of the biggest problems. And I started doing my own research and started doing a lot of advocacy against mental illness and suicide awareness, and especially in our youth, because in the DMV area, we're losing our youth to suicide, and we're not talking about it because of the stigma. And I think if we get away from that and start reaching out to people and let people talk, it might help a lot in our society.
Well, let me see what Dr. Tulin says about what you've shared with us, Danya. Dr. Tulin.
Well, first of all, I do want to say everyone should know that if they have thoughts of suicide or someone they know has thoughts of suicide, every emergency room is open 24 hours a day, every day, to help. And just like we talked about a car accident, you want to have car insurance. You might not like paying for it, but if you have an accident, you're very glad that you have it. So we all have that insurance. We will be taken care of in that way. That may sound extreme, but it's important to know that at the basis. And we may have trouble understanding how someone could have thought to do this, not cared about us, not cared about their family. And I'm so sorry to hear this happen to you. Your brother was likely to be unable to consider that in his tremendous depression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Donya, thank you so much for sharing with us. Need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Raymond calling from D.C. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about suicide and mental health. We'll be back in just a moment.
It's Weekend.
You taking a look at suicide and mental health on this Medical Monday. Raymond calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Raymond. What's on your mind?
I thought of suicide twice. Not only did I thought of it, I attempted to do it by driving my car off the New York Bridge, but a motorist stopped me. This happened last year. I just came home from prison. I've been incarcerated 40 years since 1989. Mm. And I went to prison because I took a toy BB gun and I robbed several banks in Georgetown, and I went to trial. Mm. My sister had cancer, and I went and robbed the banks to help pay for her cancer that her job couldn't pay for.
Raymond, let me ask you, since this suicide attempt last year, have you sought help to deal with how you were feeling?
I sought help for it, but the mental health places I went to really couldn't, I didn't feel them. I just prayed about it. Actually, I can really tell you what really, I thought about certain things. I thought about something Melvin Lindsay said. He's the original host of The Quiet Storm.
That's correct. Uh-huh.
And I got some of his Quiet Storm recordings on my tablet that they sold us in prison.
Hmm.
And one of the things that I remember him saying when he hosted the Quiet Storm, you know, back in 73, you know, he said, life just has to be lived. It's just that simple.
Yeah. How you said that, and I've got to move on, but you mentioned prayer. How has that helped you after the incident last year? Are you in a better place?
I feel I am. You know, I think I deal with mostly loneliness and just readjusting back because I'm in a technology age. And when I got incarcerated, they didn't have cell phones and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to learn all of that all over again as if I was a new baby.
Yeah.
And I think I never knew how powerful loneliness could be. I've never used drugs. I've never drank a day in my life. Mm. And I didn't know that loneliness could be so powerful. Mm. You know, I think.
Well, Raymond, let me ask Dr. Tulin real quick, Dr. Tulin, suggestions for Raymond to continue moving forward and up after the incident last year.
Firstly, I would say that spirituality can be very, very helpful. In fact, suicide rates in the African American community are lower than in the white community, and some folks think this relates to greater spirituality. And so since that has helped you, I think you should continue. And loneliness is a factor that we know is very negative and contributes to depression and even to suicidal thoughts and actions. So any steps you can take to reach out to other people, let's say people of faith, who will be likely to embrace you, that would be terrific.
Yeah.
And I also mentioned too that for those of you that are listening that have tried many different ways to get to strengthen your faith or to turn to religious leaders and it hasn't worked, it does not mean that you're a bad Christian. It doesn't mean that you're not praying hard enough. It just means that you may have to find a different set of coping skills to help you on your journey. So I also wanted to put that out there because there are some people who, yes, spirituality is helpful for them, but then there are also some people that they have turned to spirituality and it's actually deepened their feelings of loneliness because they've been praying really hard and things just haven't been looking up.
Yeah. And let's say, you know, Raymond, you are still here. And I think that is a positive thing, particularly after all that you've gone through. And so I want to thank you for sharing your experience and your thoughts with us on the program this evening. And please continue to take care of yourself. I want to ask Siobhan, you were on Suicide Watch last week. What is Suicide Watch? Talk to me as much as you can about that experience. We hear about it on TV, but the reality is probably different.
Yes, and I had tweeted and posted about that because people are saying that this suicide thing is new, and it's not a thing. I'm sorry that this whole suicide, the publicity around it, that it's new. And I think Dr. Tulin can attest that we see this all the time. It just doesn't make the news. And so what does Suicide Watch look like? Looks like, well, for me, or, well, yeah, what it looks like out in the community is we're constantly giving this person a lot of attention. We're not letting this person be alone at all. So pretty much a person can be watched round the clock for 24 hours, never ending. And so basically, if the person's severity of their suicide symptoms are not decreasing, then myself and a medical team would make the decision that they would need to go into a hospital for further psychiatric care. And I also want to say that I was able to do this because I'm a licensed professional and I was doing this with other individuals. I do not suggest that you try to do a suicide watch on your own and make promises with somebody. I think that if you are in the community and you see that someone is suicidal, that you do what Dr. Tulin says and you call a hotline number or you take them to an ER. So I wanted to make sure I stress that.
How do you know that someone requires a suicide watch?
Well, some people really feel a severe type of agony where they just really do not want to be here anymore. And I kind of look at Suicide Watch as kind of like a more intensified revival because myself as a therapist, when I work with my clients, I genuinely want you to fight. I genuinely want you to live. And I'm working with you. I'm fighting with you to not feed into those irrational thoughts, that dysfunctional thinking that's telling you that you're not worth life. So what does it look like? It's just, again, me constantly checking in with this person over and over and over again, having talks, trying to make sure this person is eating, trying to make sure this person is sleeping. Because if you're eating, if your appetite and your sleep goes down, then the intensity of your depressive symptoms actually go up. So I always try to make sure during a suicide watch that, one, you're eating, you're sleeping, and you're not alone. And that's the other thing. I don't necessarily have to say anything when I'm sitting next to these individuals. Sometimes people just need for you to just sit with them. And sometimes the people, and to be honest with you, I've had suicide watches where my clients, my patients are like, I don't want to deal with you. Why are you next to me? Like, you need to get away from me. And so it's my job to not feed into that and stay with them at all times.
Dr. Tulin, often we hear professionals such as yourself, such as Siobhan, say that if you are feeling depressed, if you are feeling suicidal, if you are feeling that you need to talk to someone, even if you're not talking about suicide, to reach out. And yet, particularly here in Washington, D.C., we have many, many people who have whether they be high-profile positions, sensitive positions, government positions, who may be reticent to do that because they feel that their livelihood may be in jeopardy. How do you address that issue? How do you tell someone to seek help when they believe that seeking help may impact their livelihood?
Well, I will say, I worked at Walter Reed Army Medical Center.
A prime example.
As a civilian for 22 years. And I had numerous instances where someone was in treatment and they came up for a security clearance review. And the issue that created difficulties was not saying you were in therapy. It was denying that you're in any kind of mental health treatment, and then that being seen in your records, because folks who are in the military specifically, those records are not private like I think they should be, but that's the truth. So I was asked, does this person have any situation that would be a compromise to national security in your judgment? And if the answer was no, it was fine for them to have therapy. I think for some people, I'm not saying all, the stigma of seeking treatment leads to the idea or the excuse that they can't do this. Everyone else can. They can't, because if so-and-so or their boss found out or whatever, they'd have difficulties. And I think we need to help them to not feel that this would be stigmatized. In fact, people who seek help for mental illness issues have protections under the Americans with Disabilities Act. So people should start talking to friends. This all doesn't mean we have to check in constantly, make sure everybody's okay. If they look a little down, get extremely worried, but create an openness to talk about these issues that are still stigmatized, but were much worse in the past.
Thanks for saying that.
Real quick.
Because I also wanted to add that if you do fear any retaliation or whatever from your employer, you can also seek out EAP services. I know the federal government, their OPM website also has a list of mental health conditions that they pretty much just give a pass on. The International Association for Firefighters has a lot of behavioral health opportunities available.
Well, I want to thank both of you, Dr. Stephen Tulin and Siobhan Odom, for coming in and speaking with us tonight. And we want to, again, remind our listeners, if you believe that you need immediate help, if you're seeking counseling, if you are having thoughts of suicide or know someone who may, you can call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. That's 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255. And of course, that information will be on the WHUR News website, WHUR.com. That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Monday, June 11th. I'm Harold Fisher. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM.